This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row 1, Seat 1 podcast. This is Ben, a.k.a. Boston Nuga. Another week here. I'm here with a confirmed shoot, Matt. We're going to talk a little bit about the Raptors, because I promised him I'd give him a little bit of time to talk about his beloved Raptors winning the NBA championship, and then his beloved Kawhi Leonard leaving the Raptors. And then our big guest this week is Kurt Stallion. We have a very entertaining interview with him. He pulls no punches, I'll tell you that much. He is very honest and very open. But Matt, welcome to the show.
Oh, good to be back, man.
I guess congratulations are in order.
Yeah, I wish I could. You know, I kind of regret not being as confident as I should have been when I was on last time. Because I really could have came on here and gloated big time if I'd have just talked a little bit more trash. But I wasn't super confident. But hey, they caught some breaks. But they pulled it out, man.
Yeah, you really did not think whatsoever that the Raptors were going to win. Honestly, most people didn't. And then they pulled it out. They really did. I know it's kind of old news now, but really that was one hell of a win by the Toronto Raptors, and they deserve all the praise in the world.
It was. I mean, honestly, it's weird because, I mean, you know, they really outplayed them for the majority of the series.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, you can't. Clay getting hurt was huge. You know, I'm not going to pretend otherwise. If Durant, when he came back, if he'd actually stayed healthy, they might have came back and won the thing. I don't have any illusions about that. But, you know, you take what's on the schedule.
Yeah.
They won the championship. That five-hour parade, did you see any of that?
There were millions of people there. It was unbelievable. I was lucky enough to be at the Celtics parade when they won in 08 and be at that scene, but the Toronto one looked like the Celtics one on steroids. It just looked amazing and couldn't happen to a better city, too.
Like, I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, I mean, I guess we'll just go ahead and get right into Kawhi. I said all season that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be super confident that he's going to stay. And then I started to get a little confident. You know, it was really starting to look like he was going to stay. And then they dropped the bombshell. But you know what? He came to Toronto. He took care of business. We won the championship. Like, you can't even really be mad about it.
Banners fly forever, brother.
Exactly. If he'd went to the Lakers, that'd have been a little different. Like, you know, I think it would have taken me a little bit longer to get over. Now I can, you know, he's the Clippers. I don't have any opinion of the Clippers, really. I can still root for him. You know, if we're not going to win it, I hope they win it.
That's the thing. I think everyone's okay with the fact that he went to the Clippers because everyone's kind of pretty neutral on the Clippers. Whereas if you went to a team like the Lakers, you know, I mean, he's with LeBron. LeBron's a polarizing figure. You know, the Lakers are a very polarizing team. The Clippers are one of those like, you know, they never won anything. They never had hurt anybody. It's one of those things where good for him, you know, and he's got Paul George. Paul George is a rootable guy. You know, it's one of those things where it's you just kind of hope that it works out for him a little bit, you know?
For now. Because remember, when the Warriors started winning, we all felt the same way about them, too.
That's true.
If the Clippers start winning, then that's all. You know, they one ring, great. But if they win more than one, we're all going to turn on them just like we always do. Like, that's just the nature of sports.
Is this the craziest free agency period you've ever seen?
Dude, I've never seen anything like it. Like, I mean, the NBA, like, you know, I'm not going to – the NBA I've gotten more into the last few years. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a fan, but not like – you know, now I'm, like, really following it.
Yeah.
And, like, I – there's nothing like it.
It
like,
gets more I'm nuts every year.
I'm getting league pass this year. Yeah. Like, I'm all in now. Like, it's the best. I think it's the best league in the world. And it, there's no way I would have said that 2-3 years ago.
It just seems to get more nuts every single year because there's no. I feel bad because there's, you know, 9 or 10 loaded ass teams now, and you honestly, I don't know who's going to win the championship next year, and you haven't been able to say that for a long time, but there's some real dog shit teams too, and the haves and have nots. I think there's a huge divide now. There's teams like Charlotte out there that are just absolutely terrible, and then there's, you know, 9 or 10 good teams that are just real good.
The thing that, and I do get people being frustrated by players having control and forcing their way out, and I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm kind of the, I mean, I like that the players have more say in the NBA than they do in almost any other league, but there are, you know, it does kind of suck to root for a team where you're not going to be able to keep your guys, but it's still, I mean, look at baseball. I would say baseball is worse as far as that's concerned.
True.
At least in the NBA, you're not on an even playing field because everyone has different markets and they have, but money wise, everybody's on an even playing field. I mean, you've all got a salary cap. Yeah, some teams spend more because of the luxury tax and they'll go in. That's one thing I love about Toronto is they spend the money.
Yeah.
Like, And you know, they're not going to be bad. I think there was like that initial reaction when Kawhi left, like, oh, they're done. And then it's kind of they realized, I mean, we're not going to win a championship again. But, I mean, it's going to be a fun team. They'll make the playoffs easily. I think their ceiling's probably – they could probably win in the first round depending on their matchup. But
if Siakam gets as progressively better as he got, that could be a real good team.
Exactly. That's the big – he's the big wild card. Like, he's already good, but if he's got one more leap in him, then he becomes a top-tier guy.
Ananobi's coming back.
Yep. And, I mean, see, there's some people who are talking like he's going to jump like Siakam did, and you can't expect to have that happen twice. But I do think – I mean, he's a good player.
Yeah. He's talented.
But, yeah, and the big thing with Siakam is – and I mean, this is just the reality of it. He's not American, which means it's more likely he's going to stay in Toronto. You know, he doesn't have that draw of, I want to go back to my country.
Go back to your hometown like Kawhi did, yeah.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, that's been the reality of it. And that's the thing that the fan base has kind of talked about for a while is Toronto's almost got to focus a little bit on the international players. And then with Masai there, you know, that's kind of a natural thing where the African players, I mean, that's Masai's wheelhouse because he's helped develop all of that stuff in Africa. So, I mean, there's already people talking like he's going to be able to get Giannis to come up there, which I don't buy for a second. But
well, Simmons dropped a rumor today on his podcast that was real fascinating. Lowry for Russ.
I don't want Russ, man.
You don't want Russ.
I don't want Russ.
Russ is the next domino to fall.
Yes, he is. Two things. Number one, I don't want locked into that contract.
It's like top three worst contracts in the league.
Yeah. And like, you can't trade Kyle, man. Not after they just won the title. You can't do it.
Okay. That's what
like, but that was like, I mean, I'm sure you saw the rumor where they were talking about George and Westbrook both going to Toronto.
Yeah.
And it turned out, like, the initial rumor was that Masai didn't want to do it. And then once, you know, it kind of got further down the road, it was more that they didn't have the draft picks to get it done.
They were just using Toronto basically as a patsy to get more draft picks out of the Clippers.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I would have been on board. But at the same time, I'm not upset that they didn't do it. I'm just not a Russ guy. Like, I think, I don't think you can win with him.
Russell Westbrook is crazy talented, but yeah, you're right. I don't know if I'd want him on my team.
And I think you know me well enough to know by now that I'm not, I don't usually say that about guys. Like, I'm kind of more forgiving of stuff, but I just, like, I don't think you can win with him. He's run everybody out of town. At least that's the illusion. And maybe I'm totally wrong about that. You know, we don't really know.
Yeah.
But it seems like nobody wants to play with him.
No, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. But he just, he's so talented. It's an if. It's a big if. But if he pulls it together, man, God, the talent.
I want to see Westbrook and Butler together in Miami so bad.
They'd kill each other.
Because, exactly. I mean, hey, you know, maybe they'll click and it'll be awesome. But there's so much potential for that to blow up.
They'd absolutely murder each other. Oh, man. Well, now that we've nerded out, people are really waiting on Kurt Stallion. Matt, I appreciate it. Anything else you want to say? You want to gloat any little bit more?
You know what? I think it speaks for itself.
Banners fly forever, brother.
Exactly. So you have fun with my buddy, Kurt. And
I'm going to see you in less than a month. Away.
I was going to say, man, SCI is coming.
One thing I just want to add just while I'm recording here on the Place to Be Nation pop feed, the newest Marvel Age, the Sarcastic Four dive into 1971 with the first of three parts covering the year. The eighth episode of Laugh in Theater has Andy welcoming the hard traveling fanboy Greg Phillips to watch one of the funniest movies of all time, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. Hard traveling fanboys kick off Spider-Man month with a countdown of their favorite Spidey villains. DC4U, the newest weekly comic show on the pop feed, is Russell and Todd bringing us monthly current events in the DC comic world for June 2019. Songs with Friends, episode 29, is Kenny Chesney's The Good Stuff and Fuel Shimmer. You know that's Steve's podcast, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he does a great job with Kelly on that. Geek and Sassy welcomes Tim Cable to recap season 2 and preview season 3 of Stranger Things. Glenn and Scott discuss and debate the Democratic hopefuls for the coming presidential election and New Spectacular. On a new episode of NBA Team, Adam Murray and Andrew Ritchie are here to reflect on what's been quite a last week in NBA land. We're doing a Greatest Songs of the 80s tournament continues. What's your favorite song of the 80s, Matt?
Oh, Your Love by The Outfield.
That's a good one. We're doing 6 polls a day for round 1. Your Love by The Outfield's probably in there. We're doing, if you go on Facebook and search PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament, like the page, you can weigh in. On the wrestling feed, on the Place to Be Nation podcast, Justin Scott and Steve Bender are back inside the home office for the 9/30/89 Madison Square Garden host show. JT and Chad opened up the 96 pay-per-view year with a look at the Royal Rumble. Oh, 96 Rumble, man. That was a Rumble that occurred. That existed. Hey, did you watch the 86 Crockett Cup?
I haven't yet, no.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. I went over Lane's house this week. Jennifer Smith, Drew Wardlaw, and Matt Souza did the Place to Be Nation. They did a podcast on the 86 Crockett Cup. That podcast was very fun. Lane and I watched some of the Crockett Cup. It's really weird because there's no announcing on it, but Lane and I watched a couple of matches on that and got real drunk at his house last week. It was real fun.
No announcing makes me want to watch that more. You got me more intrigued now.
It's real weird watching wrestling with no announcing. It's just kind of things are happening in the vacuum because you're so conditioned to watching wrestling with announcing that it's just like this is happening in a vacuum. I don't get this. And the 10th episode of Row One Seat One, I had Johnny P. You're gonna see Johnny P in a couple weeks.
Oh yeah. Big fan of Johnny P.
Love Johnny P. And then on episode 129 of Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve previewed Fighter Fest, ROH's Best in the World, and recapped 2002 TNA. On PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's Tribute to 94 is off and running with pieces on the 66th Academy Awards and the 94 World Cup and the miniseries The Stand. On the Excellent Adventure team is back with ECW's One Night Stand 2006. Hell of a pay-per-view there. Check out our social media pages and message board at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list. Thank you, Matt, and we will have Kurt Stallion on right now. We are here with Kurt Stallion, one of my favorite wrestlers on the planet, and a human being who defies physics with his chops. Kurt, thank you for coming on.
Hello.
thank you so much, Kurt. We appreciate having you on. You are joining us from scenic Texas. How are things in Texas, my friend?
Scenic? No, it's pretty hot, honestly. I live in the desert, so it's pretty ridiculous right now. But other than that, I can't complain. Had an easy weekend, one show, back at the house, just chilling, putting laundry up.
Now, you grew up in Texas, right?
Oh, yeah, born and raised.
Born and raised. Where in Texas did you grow up?
Crane, Texas, 30 miles south of Midland, Odessa, and...
Oil country.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't have to explain that. Hell yeah.
I read Friday Night Lights. So where are you in relation to major cities in Texas for those people who don't know the geography of Texas? And like, how does that relate to your consumption of wrestling as a kid?
Well, I am like directly, like fucking spot in the middle between Dallas and El Paso on Interstate 20. There's Lubbock is 2.5 hours north. Amarillo is 4 hours north. Austin and San Antonio are both respectively 4.5 hours to the east. El Paso is 4 hours west. Dallas is 4 hours north. Houston's 9 hours southeast. Yeah, dude, like, I'm far from everything. So
you're smack dab in the middle of everything.
I guess you could put it that way without the everything being close.
So what wrestling did you get as a kid? Because you're in Texas, so you have, you know, world class as an influence. You know, you have Amarillo's not around when you're a kid, obviously, right? But is Houston wrestling around when you're a kid? What wrestling did you get? It's not Houston's done when you're a kid.
I had AAA, CMLL, and WWE, and I also used to watch TNA when it had the ticker on Fox Sports Net. Other than that, that was all my exposure to pro wrestling. I didn't know what the fuck indie wrestling was until I was 15 or 16, whenever all these people from WWE started getting called up, and I was like, who are these guys? And my buddy was like, oh, Wikipedia is this thing. It's cool. It tells you everything about these people. And we would sit there for hours and just research Wikipedia and figure out that there's other promotions out there and other stuff for pro wrestling in general. And then I found out there's Anarchy in Austin, Texas, Anarchy Championship Wrestling. That's the first like indie that I ever discovered about. They were pretty popping at one point in Texas, but now not so much.
Just to backtrack a little bit, you had AAA and CMLL. You mentioned those as some of your influences. I very few people had Lucha as influences that I knew, you know, growing up and stuff like that. Were Lucha major influences on you as a wrestler and as a kid?
Absolutely. I was super fascinated with Lucha Libre just because it was just ridiculous athleticism. I was the kid growing up that all my other buddies in elementary school that liked wrestling, I wasn't allowed to watch wrestling because I came from a single parent household and it was my mother and she was just anti everything cool. So I used to shit on my buddies for liking wrestling. And then I think about fifth grade or so, like year 2000 is when I really started like actually, I got an appreciation for it more so than anything because I was just this little ADHD bastard fuck hell child. And there was nothing I could relate to. Nothing. All I liked was Dragon Ball Z and Star Wars growing up. And I was just like, fuck. So I found one time I decided to watch Raw with one of my buddies. And I couldn't help but be fascinated by the lighting on the stage and that they get their own custom music and that there's thousands of people focused on them and millions at home watching them. And I just desperately wanted that attention instantly. And after realizing that that was something, I grew an appreciation for the art of professional wrestling. Sure. In terms of how these guys are going out there and sometimes suspending my disbelief in actuality by making me question if what they're doing is real or not. Guys like Chris Benoit and Hardcore Holly, Eddie Guerrero, dudes that really went out there and fucking went at it. Like, that's the kind of shit that really got me hooked in, if you can't tell by the way I wrestle now.
Yeah, I can see that in your style completely.
But yeah, the Lucha stuff, like, that was just... like, I was just blown away. My who would I say my favorite one? Abismo Negro was fucking, he was way up there on my list. And I remember when they found his ass dead in a river in Mexico face down, and that, like, broke my heart. I was like, oh, fuck. And then funny fact about that, him being my favorite luchador, Chris Benoit was my favorite wrestler, and we all know what happened to him.
Awkward, yeah, shit.
So I was like, man, I just need to quit having favorites. But it's fucking, that's the little backstory there on all that. I just couldn't stop. After I realized, like, this is a fucking attention deficit hyper disorder kid's fucking dream, like, and I started appreciating the theatrics and the art and the performance behind it. Like, going out there and doing that without fucking up on national television live was just mind-blowing to me. And I was like, fuck, I really like this. And before I knew it, I was one of those every Monday fucking would just convulse if I wasn't in front of a TV. So...
now, you said, because I've talked to a lot of wrestlers about this as well, you said your mother really discouraged it. Did she eventually notice that this was something that you were positively, like... getting on to, or was it always a fight with her?
I think it just became one day she noticed and it was just disregarded because I was at that age where I was just like gonna do whatever the fuck I wanted to do essentially. And I think it just kind of got like tossed to the side, her personal feelings towards it, because I was past the point of where she wanted me to be in life anyway. So it's like, fuck it, I'll just work on his sisters and make sure that they turn out better.
So how old were you when you went to your first show?
August either 2nd or 4th, 2004. So I just turned 14, honestly. And it was a Monday Night Raw. The main event was Benoit as the heavyweight champion with Jericho and Edge versus Evolution without Triple H. And it's funny because I saw on a top 10 list of the greatest Raw main events that are never talked about, and that was like number 3. And I went back and watched it, and I was like, wow, that was cool. But yeah, that was a really good Raw.
Talk about your... you know, as an ADHD kid, you know, you watch it on TV and you talk about the lights and the production and all that sort of stuff, you know, but talk about your sensory overload as you enter the building and you first see everything.
Bro, I'll never forget, like, the sea of people was a trip, because I had never been to anything like that, like a big organized event that size. But when we walked through that curtain to go find seats, and there was the stage, like, there was everything right there. The front had become, like, that shit was, I knew before, like, I was like, I'm gonna be a pro wrestler, there's just nothing else in my life that I want to do, like, fuck it. But when I walked through and I saw that, I was already daydreaming about my name on that fucking board and walking down that ramp. I'm like, ugh. And it just ain't stopped, brother.
You knew right then and there.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned some of the guys, because, you know, I hate to break it to you, Kurt, but you're not the biggest dude who I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. But the guys that you sort of gravitated to, like the Guerreros and Benoit and stuff like that, they weren't the biggest guys either. Were they sort of your heroes because you weren't the biggest kid, but they were still kicking ass? Was that something that really stuck out for you? Was like, you know what, these dudes aren't big motherfuckers, but like, they're still just beating the shit out of guys. Like, was that something you related to?
Honestly, not at all.
Really? Like, okay. Okay.
Like, I was always just a strong little fuck. I was just real scrappy growing up. Yeah. And I think that's what I took to, was the scrappiness of those guys and the passion, the way they really just put everything into what they were doing rather than going through the motions. Sure. I could tell. And even as a child, I could tell. And I was like, these guys are... And then Randy Orton showed up, and I was like, oh, who's this guy? I love him. And yeah, I remember when Orton versus Benoit happened at SummerSlam 2004, and I told my best friend, I was like, whoever wins this match will be my favorite for the rest of my life, and Orton won it. So, still huge Orton mark, but I honestly, Shibata's fucking king.
Well, yeah. I know your love for Shibata. And we'll talk about that, because I want to hear your experience of meeting Shibata. But so you started going to shows and stuff like that. Did you play sports in school too, or is it just, you know, you singular love for wrestling and just can't waiting down the moments to like join a wrestling school?
I played sports in middle school, just football and track. I wasn't very good at them because I didn't care about them. I was already smoking pot when I was like 11, so like I just didn't. And then when I was in high school, I didn't do sports all the way until the off season of my junior year, when I got in some trouble and got put on probation and realized I needed an outlet that didn't involve smoking pot. I couldn't do that, so sure. I joined sports and I got really fucking good. But fun fact, my freshman year in high school, I didn't pass any classes except for PE.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's because all I like to do is skateboard and smoke pot and play video games. Anyways, that turned around to bite me in the ass, because when I became a senior in high school, I was supposed to start on the football team as a tight end, and I was second string defensive end, and I didn't get to play because I was a fifth year senior. UIL rules don't allow that shit.
Oh shit.
So yeah, that was the first time I ever had my heart broken. And that was also the first time I'd ever really trained for anything. And after that point, I kind of fell off the wagon wheel for a little bit. And eventually, I remember I was dating a girl for like 7 years. And I remember I found a wrestling school and I started doing it, and I was doing real good. And it got to the point where I started putting a lot of myself into the wrestling, because I realized what I was getting out of it is what I was putting into it also. Yeah. So.
Where was it? What was this wrestling school? Where was the school? Was it close to home? Talk about your experience, you know, joining a wrestling school, because that's a big decision.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it wasn't a big decision at the time. It was an easy, simple, like absolute decision that
really?
I didn't even think about. I was living in San Antonio. I moved there right out of high school, and San Antonio wasn't going well for me, because all I did was spend all my money on my girlfriend. Never had any money ever. I was broke. I was fucking starving. But she was a bad person. And so I went to Marshall, Texas, from San Antonio, Texas, which is about 5 hours away from my grandparents lived there. It's Northeast Texas. And I stayed there for a couple months. I was going to go to a technical school and learn how to fix all the monitors in hospitals.
Come a little closer to your phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to go to a technical school. And I was about a week away from starting, and my friend calls me, and he's like, dude, you've got to come home. There's a wrestling school here. And I was like, what do you mean there's a fucking wrestling school back home? And he said, in Odessa, Texas, there's old school wrestling, OSW, ran by Fred Urban III, God rest his soul. And he started the day after he called me. And a week later, I packed my bags and went back home and started training. Fucking, like, plateaued there, essentially, fucking fast, because there was really nobody prominent there.
Fred, what's his name? Fred Evers? Ever?
Fred Urban.
Urban?
The third. Urban. Well, he's very, very, very well known by lots of, like, older wrestlers and, like, former, like, 2000-era WWE guys.
Sure, okay. Gotcha.
Like, He didn't train me, but he owned OSW. The guy that trained me, his name was Justin Taylor. He's anything he's done is because I left and then helped him get those fucking spots after I came back. I was like, here, thanks for everything. But he's a good dude.
Fair, okay.
Yeah, I'll give him that. I just wish he was fucking pro wrestling rather than just, I don't like bullshitters. So I kind of hit the glass ceiling there and busted through it. Cause,
how long did you train there?
About a year and a half, I'd say. So I started training October of 2012, but okay. I shattered my heels, both my feet.
Oh,
my second.
God.
Yeah. So I had my first match in July 2013. In July 2014, I was already one of the champs of the promotion. OSW, everything was fucking cool. I get on Facebook one night and I see there's a sponsored ad for a Ring of Honor 5-day camp in St. Louis, Missouri, ran by the former, or he was the current champion at the time, Michael Elk. And I showed up to training the next day and asked everybody there, who wants to go to this camp with me? And everybody's like, you shouldn't do that. You're not ready for that. None of us are. And I read it out loud. I said, all experience, welcome. Y'all want to get better or not? Anyways, nobody wanted to, so I drove for the first time in my life fucking 1,000 miles by myself, stayed there for a week, did that camp, and 2 months later, ROH was in San Antonio. I got a spot, get beat up by a War Machine, and I was just like, you know what? I want to do this for the rest of my life for fucking sure, so I'm going to pack all my bags and go to St. Louis. That's when my girlfriend at the time gave me the ultimatum. It's me or wrestling. And I was like, well, I'm picking the one that's not making me choose. And went to St. Louis and fucking had the time of my life. The first month I was there, I was doing Ring of Honor matches. And I was like, wow, like this is the best decision I've ever made. And I was there for 3 years, and I'm about to go back in a month. So.
And you were training with Elgin, right?
Oh, yeah. He's fucking a jackass, but he is the man. He's like a mad scientist of pro wrestling. He's a fucking shitty human being, but he's a really good pro wrestler. And he's a decent buddy.
Fair. Entirely yeah. fair. And so you just basically continue your training at his school?
Yeah, I essentially like was revamped. I pretty much was broken down and started from scratch because, you know, I just wasn't getting... I was taught how to walk, and that was about it in Odessa. He taught me how to run, how to catch a ball, how to fucking put food in my mouth, wrestling-wise, so...
So at this point, too, you're gaining a reputation as well for being a bit of a road warrior and being the guy who is willing to take a booking everywhere and anywhere. Where does this kind of... I don't want to call it wanderlust, but like... You're that guy who is on every show, and you're that guy who's willing to who's not turning anything down and doesn't let your ego get in the way and any of that sort of bullshit. Where does that come from in you?
Oh, well, I'm probably a psychopath, honestly, but it was just that's the way I always thought pro wrestling was supposed to be, and I told myself if I'm going to do this, I'm going to fucking do it to it. You know what I mean? I'm in it to win it. And I realized a lot of guys weren't doing it how I thought it needed to be done, so I felt like I could set an example and actually fucking sacrifice my brain and fucking body to make it fucking happen. And I lost a lot of sleep and a lot of money, dude. Like, that's another part. I think it's just guys didn't have the finances for it and I didn't either, but I would make the finances. I would sacrifice shit. I'd sell shit. I'd pawn shit. Like, whatever I had to do to make sure I made it to the show. Because 9 times out of 10, guess who wasn't getting paid very much? Oh, Curt Stallion. But, hey, you had a really good match tonight, man. You fucking really went out there and fucking landed on your head 1,000 times for us. We really appreciate it. Here's a hot dog and handshake. Well, thanks, guys. I'll be back next month if you're booking me. Yeah, we'll let you know. Like, fuck that. Like, I just... That shit was 2 years of that, 3 years of that was just so mentally like.
I'd see you in the most random ass places, and I'd be like, "Motherfucker, you drove from St. Louis for this shit, like out to this like random like, and not just in like Tennessee or whatever, like you know, in like Florida or you know, I mean Georgia or whatever, and just like and just like, dude, really like."
Yeah, it really like. I don't think it would have been so bad if I had done it how everybody else I feel is doing it, which is like, you know, some of the better guys that aren't getting flown places, they'll hit the road a good, like a good ass fucking trip 1 or 2 times a month. And I was doing that shit every fucking day of the goddamn week, pretty much except Mondays and Tuesdays, like for a long time. And it really, really, Like people, I hated showing up places and people would be like, "You look like a zombie. You look like a cancer patient. You just look like you're gonna die." And I would want to fucking throw it in their face and be like, "Yeah, because I fucking got laid for this show, even though I was working all night the night before to go to sleep," like shit like that. But it paid off. Look where the fuck I am now. Yeah, like, I was gonna say, my bed,
two good chilling. Things came from this, because you got on a lot of people's radar when you were doing this. And got known, you know, at least in my circles and a lot of other circles, as this dude is young in the business, but real, real good. And you also got known as a dude who's, you know, willing to travel and, you know, willing to work and, you know, just like agreeable, you know, and just not, you know, someone without an ego.
I just don't want to be a bad fucking person to the fans, because then that's going to make everybody start kind of questioning everybody else. And it's, I want to kind of set an example, like, hey, not all of us are fucking liars and fucking pieces of shit. Like, yeah, I'm kind of a piece of shit sometimes, but I'm straight up, I'll be honest with you about it. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of dishonesty in pro wrestling, and I especially with the fans. And I'm straightforward with you guys. Like, I fucking love my fans. I appreciate people that want to fucking take the time out of their day to fucking talk to me. Like, absolutely. Let's fucking do it. Let's take a picture. Let's fucking whatever. I can't say certain things. I almost went off.
Never mind. Yeah, let's hang out.
Yeah.
Let's chill. I think I was throwing down. But yeah. But you just got you and also you got a reputation of someone who's getting real good real fast. Also,
that's cool.
And someone who's going to deliver a match that not only is real good, but someone who's getting progressively better with each match. Through nice. You know, especially 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, Curt Stallion became a guy who you could really count on for a hard-hitting, fantastic match. And one group who noticed that was Ring of Honor. And you got in the Top Prospect Tournament. Talk about your experience there, because not a lot of people get in that.
I remember I was hanging outside with Delirious and Silas Young in my car. And we're just chilling. That's all. We're just chilling, you know, just chilling. And whenever Hunter gets out of the car and starts walking back to the venue, he stopped before he closed the door. Me and Silas were sitting in the front seats, and he was in the back. He goes, "Oh yeah, Kurt, this was December of 2016. He goes, 2017 Top Prospect Tournament. You're the first guy we thought of. Congratulations." He closed the door and walked away. And Silas goes, "Hell yeah, man, that's cool as fuck." And I just couldn't close my mouth. I couldn't move my legs. I was just like, this is the first goal that I moved up to St. Louis to attain. Like, and it was such a high goal to set. Like, it was such a high goal to set. And I achieved it. Fucking, I gave myself 5 years. I did it in two.
But you didn't just get in. You went to the finals, right?
I went semifinals.
So, there was I'm sorry. I thought you got
there. There was some politicking that I'm not going to talk about.
I remembered you in the finals, but that's, you're the only person I remember for that whole damn tournament. So what does that say about the tournament? So,
hell yeah.
So yeah, you got in. I mean, you're in Ring of Honor, and then you're starting to get even more major bookings too. What's the next level from Ring of Honor that you're starting to get from there?
I think AAW in Chicago really was the, because they're only 4 hours away from St. Louis, and I was at a lot of their shows and never got booked. If I did, it was on a dark match, and it was usually with terrible guys, and I didn't know how to lead anybody, so the match would just suck. But one time, Danny Daniels finally was just, it's because I did, God, I fucking remember now, piece of shit. I was doing a show in Chicago called Blitz, and Danny Daniels is one of those guys that you just can't wrestle for anywhere else in Chicago if you want to work for him. And he messaged me and was just like, "Hey,
no comment.
I want you to come work for me, but you can't work for Blitz anymore. So I saw your announce for their next show, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Look, dude, I'm going to do," and I wanted AEW so bad, but I was like, "I'm going to do the next Blitz show. But after that, I won't take any more bookings if you're telling me you'll bring me in. And we made a deal, and I went in. He brought in me, Jake Something, and Danny Adams, and then he kept me and Jake Something. Sorry, Dan. And it's been a fucking hell of a ride ever since. Like, that's one of the main places where I was in a locker room with nothing but fucking top talent.
Yeah.
Like, every guy in there was somebody worth the fuck, and they all saw my fucking, like, fighting spirit outside of pro wrestling, and what I did to get to shows, how much it took out of me, driving 19 hours one way every two fucking weeks, like, by myself, that kind of shit. Like, that helped me a lot. And then from there, we go New Japan Dojo.
Well, in between too, just on my end, selfishly, you're getting booked on some of the Scenic City stuff too.
Oh no, absolutely! Yeah, yeah. Like, Scenic City's fucking, I forgot the time frame of where that is in between all this stuff, but I think it's around the same time when I started working for AEW. Whenever me and Riddle had that fucking little exchange in the finals, that was cool. But yeah, I definitely killed myself in those Scenic City shows just because I love Dylan and Papa Hill so much and just wanted them to be proud of me. But now they don't book me for this year, so it's fucking jerk off on their faces and then tell them I love them afterwards. Nah, I already talked to Dylan. I was like, motherfucker, how dare you? And he's like, oh.
Well, don't blame me. I'm in Chattanooga. I try.
It's all good. No, it's all good, bro. Like, I would have loved to have been there just because I enjoy the atmosphere. But I understand. I'm not fucking.
It's all good.
Holding grudges.
It's all good. Besides, you're big time now, anyway. So
shit, boy. You know.
This is the big chapter I want to get. This is one of the big chapters I want to get to. New Japan announces a dojo. Your god figure, Shibata, is there.
Here's how it really went down. I fucking saw that New Japan tweeted, we're going to open a dojo in Los Angeles. And I was like, fuck me, I'm signing up. And then I was like, oh my god, I got to get health insurance. I got to do all this stuff that I've never done before. I did it all. Took it all fucking care of. And then they sent me the email. They're like, we'd like to fucking tell you you got accepted the first class of the New Japan Dojo. You're making history. Congratulations. And then 2 weeks after that, I'm already getting ready. 2 weeks after, I get an email that says, private information has not been released to the public yet. Your trainer is going to be Katsuyori Shibata and Scorpio Sky and Maki Omiro. And I was just like, my eyes watered up and shit. And I was like, this is the fucking universe just thanking me for busting my ass. Like, well, I don't know what this is. I don't deserve this. But anyways, yeah. And then I drove from Crane, Texas to Chicago, 19 hours to wrestle, did not get to sleep, and then drove immediately from Chicago to Los Angeles, 31 fucking hours, and had to go to the dojo.
What does Shibata mean to you?
Oh my god, what a question. He's one of those guys that anytime I turn on any one of his matches ever, even if it's just a tidbit of it, he reignites that fire in my fucking belly. So if I ever once even start questioning myself whatsoever, if I don't go look at that picture of me and him smiling, I'll go watch a fucking match. And there it is again. So the things that fool has done to himself and to other people to make sure guys like me fucking stay tuned in is more than enough for me. Like, I love him. I fucking love him. I told him I loved him too, and he didn't know what the fuck I was talking about, but at least I got to say it.
So you go out there. What, I mean, you're, who else is out there training? Talk about what is a New Japan Dojo like? I can't even imagine, dude.
Yeah, I couldn't either until I got there and went through it. Oh my god. I've never done anything that rigorous or intense in my entire life except DMT. That was dope, but we won't go there. It was so, like, literally, as soon as we were done walking back to our motel that was two blocks away, like, we would all go to our rooms and we get in bathtubs and sit there in Epsom salt, and then we would get out, go eat, go back to our room, sit in Epsom salt and go to bed, wake up, sit in Epsom salt, go to training, come home. It was so, like, you couldn't walk, you couldn't move your fucking arms. On the last day, I'll never forget. It was the last workout before we had our matches. And I had to do what are called Spider-Man push-ups. And you get on the floor and you walk like Spider-Man as if he was crawling up a building. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I couldn't even, like, I couldn't lift a fucking finger, let alone do that shit. And then as I'm doing it, Shibata walks around the ring and he's focused on me and me alone. He's got his kendo stick in his hand and he puts it about a foot above the ground and he goes, under my sword. And I go, every fiber of my being to just move my arms. Yeah, that was intense.
So who else is there at that camp?
Josh Briggs, Billy Brash. Those were my two favorites while I was there. This one kid.
Those are two great dudes, by the way. I've had a chance to talk with both of them extensively, and they're like two of the good souls in professional wrestling.
Yeah, Briggs got me booked in Beyond in a match against him. So that was I always appreciate that. I literally just looked at the picture earlier, but all I can focus on is Kushida because he showed up the last day and helped us out. But one of the guys that's still there, one of the dudes Shibata actually picked, what he was looking for, he explained it to us at the beginning, but we didn't understand until the end. He was looking for Samurai. And that's somebody that is just obedient, does not fucking question, hesitate, is a yes man to the fucking T, but also like looks like somebody fucking drew him in an anime, like super fucking jacked, stout, quiet, stone face. That's what Shibata likes, and that's what he was looking for, and we all found that out afterwards, but we still all got such a wonderful experience and learning fucking lessons out of it. So
yeah, I love you, Kurt, but you're not a yes man. Like, I just, no offense. No, dude. No offense.
Yeah. I feel bad because I know I'm leaving people out because it was quite the fucking, like, quite the class, honestly. But, yeah, there's this dude named Adrian Quest from California. He's fucking dope. He's one of Rocky Romero's students. Man, I'm just going to stop there. There was a bunch of cool dudes there.
Good dudes, yeah. Good dudes. So you're kind of, does it put a whole new spark in your game at that point? Like you're ready to take on the fucking world now that you trained under Shibata and like, you know, been to the New Japan, like you're a whole new wrestler. Now you're ready, you know, after you've been to this dojo.
I felt that way. Honestly, I don't know if it was true or not, but I definitely had a reinvigorated sense of, I just want to fuck people up safely. But yeah, I remember one time I was wrestling for the Bone Storm tournament at Southern Underground Pro.
Goddamn right.
Frey was really drunk, and in the background, he just yelled out real loud, "Shibata sucks!" And I fucking, like, I stopped the match and, like, looked for who said it and shit. I was like, "Watch your fucking mouth." And then I realized it was Frey fucking trolling me. But yeah, that was a fun moment.
Yeah, I think I was standing right by him, actually.
He was plastered, bro. I still got the 8x10 that he signed to me. That's mine. Like, I sent him a picture of it yesterday. That's funny.
God bless Michael. He's great. Oh, man. Dude.
Yeah, I wish I lived with him in an apartment somewhere when I was like 50, 60. And then
you really don't. I've been down there to hang out with him. You really don't. Trust me.
I want to grow old with you, Frank.
I went down to location undisclosed. We went and watched a football game together, and he's a teddy bear when you hang out with him in person. That's the thing. That's what people don't get about him. He puts on a fun act and all that sort of stuff, and he does it to just basically get a good laugh. But like, what people don't get is that he's like, when he's your friend, like, he's just like the best fucking dude.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would not fucking argue with any of that. Yeah. Whenever him and Vic get together, though, God.
Oh, Christ.
No. Oh, I love him both. Lord.
It's, I, me, him, and the Tommy from St. Louis. Obviously, you know Tommy. Tommy's the man. We all had dinner together before the Ring of Honor show at Madison Square Garden. And the absolute look on Frey's face as he walked into the holy arena that was Madison Square Garden was like, I'd call it a kid on Christmas, but that doesn't even do it justice. It was like it was the most beautiful sight my eyes had ever seen. Just like Mike, just like lighting up, like, my God, My God, we're here.
My God.
But I digress. I'm sorry. So you're out there, you're kicking ass. You're Southern Underground Pro. You're the shit. You're all throughout the Southeast. You're in the Midwest. You're frigging everywhere, basically. And then your next big call is the call from Gabe, right?
Yeah, dude. I was sitting at my buddy's, not smoking pot, and nope. Then I just get a message. I'm all not smoking pot.
Definitely so not.
Definitely not. And I get a fucking email, dude, or a Facebook message, and it says Gabe. And I thought it was this one kid that I helped train. And I was like, what the fuck does this little bitch want? And I open it, and it says Sapolsky. And I look at my buddy, and my mouth was just open, and my eyes were big. And he's like, what? What's going on? And I just kept staring at him for like 10 seconds. And finally, he just snatched my phone. He goes, who the fuck is Gabe Sapolsky? And I was just like, let me tell you. And then I explained it to him, and then I read the message after explaining who the guy was to my buddy, and he pretty much told me that he had been hearing my name off and on for a little bit, and then he said from former and current roster members, and then I found out that it was mainly Riddle that had fucking told him, like, yo, book Kurt Stallion or else. But yeah,
God bless Matthew. What a great
yeah,
man.
Definitely. I love him. He booked me. He told me I stole the show the whole weekend, both matches that I had. And he goes, Sal said he didn't get to see the matches and thinks that it was a fluke. So we need you to fly yourself back up, because that was my deal. I had to fly myself to New York if I wanted to be on the Evolve shows the first time I did it.
No shit.
And so, yeah. So I was like, fuck yeah, I'll do it, of course. And then just for the opportunity. And then the second time when they're like, hey, Sal said it was a fluke. That again. I did it again, but whenever I did it, I went up to Gabe and I was just like, you motherfuckers could have flew me up here. That's really shitty. You ought to do that. He goes, well, you know, we don't really have an established relationship with you, blah, 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 blah. Anyhow, at the end of the weekend, they offered me a contract that I sat on for 2 weeks while I got offers from other places that I can't talk about, even though I'm an elitist.
Fair.
But, yeah, so, anyhow, I hope you caught that.
Yeah, sure. I did. Yes.
Yeah,
you're,
so,
you're subtle as a brick to the fucking head.
Dude, I know. But yeah, I chose Evolve. I let the other places know that I was choosing Evolve and why I was doing it, because I didn't grow up dreaming of going to WCW. but yeah, my two main goals for signing for Evolve. I told everybody this that I was close to. I was like, I want to wrestle Matt Riddle somehow, some fucking way. And I know Evolve's the only place I can do that. And these are two potential opportunities, mind you. Neither one of these were offered or fucking granted upon me signing. And I didn't bring them to anybody's attention that was in a position to make it happen. The other one was NXT. I'm 4 months in with Evolve. I've already got my fucking first one that I thought was going to take way longer. And now it's just focusing on fucking... I don't give a fuck about, like, winning fucking matches and shit like that. I just want to have the best goddamn match. So if I never get, like, the Evolve title or anything like that, it's not going to break my fucking heart. But I goddamn want to fucking use this as a stepping stone to get to WWE. Yeah. And to do that, I need to focus on the Evolve title in kayfabe and in real life. Yeah. Like, fucking. So
you
I
need
think
to focus
that's
on,
what
rip,
I'm gonna...
on ripping it up in Evolve specifically.
Yes, absolutely. That's yeah. there. That's the simplest way to break it down. But yeah, that's the plan right now. I just got to get through WWE this Friday on my 29th birthday, July 13th. And
well, I saw you in the Atlanta show, you and Briggs. We're in the opener, and you had the best fucking match on the card, including the goddamn Adam Cole match. Like, you guys had the damn best show on the card. So you're already doing that. And from all the stuff I've seen, all the reports I'm hearing, you're already tearing it up in Evolve.
It's funny, because I don't ever think twice about shit like that. I don't ever think to myself, I'm going to go out there and have the best fucking match, this and that. It's just because I do it. I just fucking make it happen, because that's the way I fucking think. Like, I'm just like, I'm going to have a badass fucking match. And if anybody tops it, cool. If they don't top it, whatever. Like, I'm just happy to make sure everybody gets their fucking money's worth and talk about Kurt Stallion.
And talk about your style. Just I didn't know really where to, how to wedge this in, because you're conservatively, how, what do you weigh? 165, 170
176 pounds, 176, but I'm announced as 186.
Yeah. So, yet you hit like a fucking Mack truck, and you throw suplexes all over the fucking place, and you headbutt people, and you basically work like, A, you have a death wish, and B, you're a man 100 pounds heavier. Talk about your style, because I think it's your style that translates, that has these matches that rip it up. And people see you as, you know, skinny as a rail, then you go in there and you're just absolutely sacrificing your body and working like a giant guy. There's no one like it, first of all. And second of all, wow, where does that come from? And what, like, how did that, what's the genesis of that?
Well, as I unbutton my pants so I can go take a shit as I explain this
Jesus
to you, sir,
Christ.
I just want you to know.
Appreciate that,
the
Kurt.
Way I, no, I just, I'm fucking straight up with you,
love
brother.
Love you, brother.
But I love you. I explain my style, I guess. I used to have such a hard time even saying that, like, because I didn't know who I was or what I am until one day I just stopped caring about thinking, well, who am I? What am I going to be? How do I make this work? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, fuck it. I just love wrestling. I'm going to be myself. And that's what worked for me the best. But the way I explain my style is, if I'm hurting myself, I fucking know I'm hurting. And I know I'm not a big guy. I was in a lot of fights growing up. I'm very scrappy, so I utilize that. But most of it's the, like, my moveset, and for instance, the headbutts. One thing I hate, a fucking quick little segue here. If you use a fucking headbutt in a professional wrestling match and you're working it, you're not actually headbutting people for real, awesome, good, that's how it's supposed to be. But if you're headbutting people and you're just fucking bouncing around a million miles an hour right after, you don't at least fucking, like, register that shit hurt, or fucking, like, grab your head for at least 2 or 3 seconds, shake it off, that shit fucking pisses me off.
Yeah.
But anyways, I, like, the headbutts, the suplexes, that stupid dumbass double backflip thing I do off the top rope, like, all this stuff hurts my opponents, but it also fucking fucks me up. But it's about the testicular fortitude, the fucking, the mental, like, I'm not gonna die. You cannot fucking kill me. The only thing that's gonna kill me is myself.
You're basically a kamikaze pilot in the ring.
Yes, my headbutt, I used to call it the kamikaze headbutt, so they renamed it Ode to Luigi.
Yeah, that's the best way I can describe your style. It's like you're gonna go down fucking swinging.
Mm-hmm. I'm a kamikaze street fighter.
Yeah, and that's so self-evident, and there's so few dudes who do that, and it translates so well, and that is translated to segue. This coming Friday, you're on the motherfucking WWE Network, brother.
Dude, it's Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. I'm sorry. Saturday.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm fucking. I called Jamie yesterday, and I was just like, you need to tell me what the fuck's happening right now. I need to know about my match. I need to know, like, the rundown. I can't stop thinking about this. I want to make sure that nothing's fucked. This is a big, 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 big deal. Biggest opportunity I've ever had, honestly. So he gave me the rundown. Fucking, like, I know what to expect. I know what all I'm doing. And I'm not as stressed out about it now, but I'm still fucking super, like, I get anxious when I'm thinking about it. Not negative anxious, but like butterflies, you know what I mean?
Do you normally get butterflies before matches, or is this a special case?
If you call having to take a piss that's not really a piss every time you're fucking about to go out, then yes,
sure. Because I know, like famously, like some, like Bill Russell, the famous basketball player, used to throw up before every single game. You know, like some athletes used to, and it was just like a healthy sort of thing. You know, like some people just get like healthily nervous. Are you one of those types?
No, I mean, I do, like, big situations, there's a lot of just like, okay, don't fucking talk to me right now. Like, but most of the time, like, right before my match, I'm usually just walking in the building after standing outside with AR Fox or somebody like that, and then I hear my music and I'm just like making jokes to the fucking curtain. And then I walk through, and that's probably why I'm smiling and just fucking playing it all casual, walking into the ring until the bell rings. And then I turn into Festus. No.
No, you also do have a sense of humor in your matches that very few guys actually have too, and that translates very well as also. And you're three-dimensional, and that's really cool, and a lot of guys don't have that, and please keep that, because
sure.
You come across as a real human being
in your
matches, and it's really cool. It's really, really cool. So have you done the count of how many states you've been in?
Dude, I used to keep up with that shit until I realized a bunch of the people I think are lame asses started keeping up with that kind of shit, and then I just kind of disregarded it. But I know it's over 25 at this point.
So I was gonna say you'd probably be the friggin' one of the kings of that shit.
I know. Like the last time I checked, it was like 2017, and I was at like 24 or 25. So I'm fucking pretty sure it's way over that by now.
It's crazy, absolutely crazy. And then you're gonna, so this, who are you working Saturday night to preview the match, preview what's happening?
I am in a Fatal 4-Way match with also newly signed Evolve superstar Steven Wolf and Sean Maluda, The Rock's cousin, and Harlem Bravado. So that's the 4-Way that I'm in.
On the same card with Adam Cole, on the same card with Akira Tozawa. Not bad company.
Super excited. The ECW arena. Like, it's going to be fucking nuts, dude.
Have you ever worked the ECW arena before?
No. That's awesome. Never even been there.
Were you an ECW guy growing up a little bit? Or, like, I know you watched WWE, but, like, did you end up catching up with ECW and, like, kind of appreciating it, or?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I ended up catching up and appreciating it, but the only thing that I knew about ECW was the fucking, like, and the invasion angle stuff. Like, I was just like, that's when I kind of started tuning in. But One Night Stand, the first one, was my really first real taste of it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I forget you're young and unlike, you know, us old fucks who actually grew up with ECW. So that's awesome. We're all very, very proud of you. I can't wait for your match on Saturday. It's going to be an absolute banger, as the kids say. From there, what do you have planned? Just Evolve going forward, or do you have what else is on the Kurt Conquers the World tour?
Well, honestly, like, I really want to go to PWG. I want to be in Bola. They're already announcing guys for Bola. I haven't been contacted for Bola. I want to do fucking Bola. I want to go to the UK and wrestle anybody and everybody. I want to go to Japan and get every fucking... Okay, I'm going to stop myself there. I just want to go to Japan, period. I want to do a lot of things.
So that's... But, I mean, you're only, what, six years into the business now, and you've already done so much. So, I mean, those are attainable goals for, like, you know, the next year, two or three. I mean, that's... At the pace you're going, that's... perfectly feasible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I set these goals, man. It's all I focus on. So it's kind of like the top prospect thing. Mm-hmm. I gave myself 5 years for that, and I did it in fucking two. Like, I don't know. I'm just going to keep fucking trekking forward, and we'll see where it goes. Because that's usually what I do. Like, regardless, I'm one of the big things I'm to fucking people coming up and stuff is do camps and seminars, and if they don't fucking pick you for whatever spot they got on a show or they don't like your shit, don't get discouraged. Don't fucking be a pussy bitch fucking asshole. Just stay the course. You take it as a lesson. You learn something. If you didn't, you're probably stupid. But just keep fucking moving forward. Don't ever get discouraged by anything. Just keep fucking going. And, yeah, that's what I've been trying to do. Elgin getting himself into a little bit of trouble in 2018 kind of discouraged me for a little bit because it was affecting me too. But then I let it go, and everything's cool.
And you're moving to St. And your next big thing too is you're moving to St. Louis. That should probably give you some more bookings as well because you'll be centrally located.
Yep, exactly. That's the fucking main purpose.
You'll be in the middle of everything. So I see big things for you, Kurt. Definitely big things coming up. And the biggest thing coming up soon is you'll be on the WWE Network this Saturday. Evolve. You guys can check it out. And you'll be working that Fatal 4-Way. Kurt, thank you so much.
I got Matt Riddle the next day.
Oh, that's right. You got Matt Riddle the next day on Evolve. Shit, that is the next day, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing. I totally forgot that was the next day. I thought that was even later. Shit, that's, yeah, you're working goddamn Riddle.
A week.
It snuck up on me. That's amazing, dude. Yeah, that's, whoo, what a weekend for you, brother.
I know. The nerves.
What a weekend. What an absolute weekend. That's amazing. Yeah, that's, so you got a hell of a weekend coming up. You got a great future coming up for you. Plug some of your social media. Plug some of the stuff you're doing.
Well, I can be found on Facebook at Kurt the Lone Star Stallion. I can be found on Instagram at Kurt_Stallion. And I can be found on Twitter at Kurt Stallion. All of these Kurt's weakness. And I'm not going to give my Snapchat out because that's my shooter name, brother, and I don't know how to have it because you just see me doing it all the time that you don't get to see. And
I know it.
Woohoo! Stuff to plug. I'm going to be on the WWE Network next week. That's about the main goddamn thing I'm focused on in Riddle.
Yeah, I got the dates confused on that. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that is coming up the next day. My God. That's completely legit. And then moving to St. Louis and killing everything. And if you want to book Kurt Stallion, those are his social media handles. You are taking bookings, unless there's an Evolve weekend, right?
Yes. I cannot wrestle on the same day as Evolve unless it is out of the country. Can't wrestle for anybody else that does television or pay-per-view. And yeah, that's it.
Everyone else is fair game. So book Kurt Stallion. He will give you one hell of a match.
KurtStallion@gmail.com.
Cool. Brother, thank you. I love you very much. You are a dear friend and one hell of a wrestler, and we are all rooting for you, my friend.
Y'all make my heart happy.
All right, dude. I will talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good.
Later, brother.
Later, dude.
Bye. Love you too.